Welcome to Pod Summit, Technology Leaders on Innovation and Entrepreneurship, hosted by Mike Boych and me, Bud Colligan. Mike and I were interviewed a while back by John Furrier, CEO of PodTech Network, and afterward we thought it would be fun to create a show where we brought together many of our friends and colleagues from Silicon Valley to talk about innovation and entrepreneurship, both lessons from the past and ideas for the future.
Bud and I have been friends since 1983 when we met on the original Apple Macintosh team. Since then, I co-founded and was CEO of Radius, which grew from zero to $100 million in revenue in 3.5 years and went public in 1990. And later I was CEO of Rendition and Easel prior to getting into the venture business, first at Alta Partners and now at Interwest Partners. After Apple, Bud was CEO of Authorware and then was co-founder and CEO of Macromedia, which he took public in 1993 and built over $100 million in sales. Bud joined Axel Partners as a venture capitalist in 1998, where he's led successful investments like Brightmail. Bud was an early director of S3 and of CNET and remains on the CNET board today. Our more complete bios are on the PodTech Network site.
Mike and I hope to bring some unique personalities and lively discussion to our show, so let's get started. Our first guest is Ron Conway, known affectionately as Silicon Valley's Uber Angel. Prior to angel investing, Ron has had a career in sales, marketing, and business development at National Semiconductor and Altos Computer Systems before buying and running his own company, Personal Training Systems. He sold PTS to CBT Systems in 1996, and after a stint there began what he is most well known for, angel investors, where he raised and invested two funds in the period of 1998 to 2005. Ron is now an active angel investor with his own money, and we're pleased to have him be our first guest on Pod Summit. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you, Bud.
Ron, Mike and I had some questions for you about your early career and angel investing, and then we'll turn to what's hot in Silicon Valley and maybe a few lessons learned for entrepreneurs starting companies today. So maybe you can tell our audience, first of all, how you got started in angel investing.
I got started in angel investing about 20 years ago when I was running Altos Computer Systems. I made about one investment a year and enjoyed that experience, enjoyed mentoring entrepreneurs. And after I sold my last company, Personal Training Systems, in 1990, I basically went full-time angel investing, actually teaming up with Ben Rosen, who was then the chairman of Compaq. And, you know, we really focused on the internet space, even though that was very, very early. We had a feeling that the internet was going to change everything, so we kind of focused on that sector and started making investments one a quarter, and then as the internet market blossomed, we got up to investing in one deal a month, and that led to actually starting a venture capital fund where we invested in many more companies.
Hey, Ron, so tell us a little bit about your early operating experience and how that's affected your outlook and your investing philosophy.
I had a lot of operating experience at National Semiconductor, which in the 70s was literally the Marine Corps of getting baptism by fire into business, working with a great leader, Charlie Spork. And then I went off and co-founded Altos Computer Systems with Dave Jackson. And in both of those companies, got a lot of very raw operating experience on how to run a company, how to manage people, how to build morale, how to run a diverse organization. And that experience has been totally invaluable to me in trying to transfer all that knowledge and learning to entrepreneurs that I've mentored ever since. So without operating experience, I would say you probably can't be a good investor.
That's interesting because there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley who are venture capitalists that don't have operating experience.
And I would say that they probably get caught flat-footed a lot when they have CEOs of companies that where they're investors that have situations where they really don't know how to advise them because they haven't been through it themselves. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier when you've been through it a couple of times, and you can relay that knowledge to a receptive entrepreneur starting a company.
Now, one of the things about angel investing that you're known for is making a lot of investments. And so tell us how you do that. I mean, do you just throw money against the wall and see what sticks? Is that the key? Or is there some process that you use to figure out what you're going to invest in?
I do not throw money against the wall and see what sticks. We actually...
But I didn't mean to suggest that, by the way.
I do. I've been accused of it many times because I make 50 or 60 investments a year myself as an angel. And angel investors LP over the space of 2 years actually invested in 250 companies.
Wow.
That's because we had a staff of 10 people. So we could invest in even more companies. But basically, for every investment we made, we looked at another 9 investments. So we, at the most, invested in 10% of the deal flow that we saw. So even though we invested in a lot of companies and it looked like we were throwing darts against the wall, we actually weren't. We were actually only investing in 10% of what we saw. And at the time of investment, obviously thought every investment would lead to some amount of liquidity. But in fact, the law of averages in the venture capital world is almost no matter what, half the companies are going to go out of business. So I made 50 investments last year. It's hard to predict, but I'll bet you 25 of them are going to go out of business.
So within that sizable population of investments that you've now seen, tell us about some of your best investments. Which were the best and why?
Funny enough, the two best investments that I ever made were in the search space. And one of them was as the search market was just starting to blossom, and that was Ask Jeeves. And Barry Diller, who now owns that company, just retired the butler, which I feel sad about. The English butler has now been laid to rest. But... Ask Jeeves was a company where you could actually type in a natural language query and get an English response. And the product was by no means perfect, but at the time it was the best search product out there and the most user-friendly. And I think part of the reason Ask Jeeves was successful and it was the fact that they built a great brand. And funny enough, the second search company we invested in was Google. And thank God for Ask Jeeves, because Ask Jeeves taught me enough about the search space that when we were presented with the Google opportunity, we could see that the quality of the search results were astronomically better than anything that was on the market. And even though it was considered late in the search game, a lot of people thought Larry and Sergey were kind of Johnny-come-latelys. The fact of the matter is they made a quantum jump in quality of search. And because I was able to completely compare that to Ask Jeeves, it allowed us to say, hey, wait a minute, we want to make a bet on Google because the quality of the search is so much better. And funny enough, Google, with no marketing, built a consumer brand name just like Ask Jeeves did. So I think a lot of building value is building up a great brand, and these two companies built up great brands and ended up being great investments, but they had very high quality products in their era.
So Jeeves did it more from the standpoint of focusing on a particular niche and it, having that be a unique niche and building a brand around that, whereas the thing that really mattered at Google was the core technology, and it was very broad, and then that core technology enabled them to get a huge footprint and build a brand.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Jeeves had this kind of natural language conversational interface where it was a Q&A format, and the answers weren't always perfect. Because that was very early in the search, life cycle, and Google very much focused on algorithms and didn't worry about the user interface or the conversational English. It was type what you want in this box and see what we come up with. And we're going to give you a whole bunch of selections on what the answer to the query is versus Ask Jeeves, which only gave you one answer.
So Mike asked you about your best investments, Ron. I hate to ask you this, but what about your worst investments? And also, why? Help our audience understand why those investments failed.
Our worst investments, and we made investments that later on did go out of business. A couple of the investments that were the worst investments were actually companies that did not go out of business, funny enough. But I think they were the worst investments that we made because we invested in bad entrepreneurs. And I think one of the qualities of a good venture capitalist is to pick good entrepreneurs. And our worst failures were companies where we invested in entrepreneurs that spent lots of money and refused to listen to their investors. Companies like 12 Entrepreneuring, which was run by Halsey Miner at the time, spent money and refused to listen to the investors until we finally liquidated the company and got some of the money back. But we could have gotten a lot more back if we had a receptive entrepreneur running the company. Another company which just got another round of funding recently was Dotcast, and that company had an entrepreneur that actually came in and took over the company who, again, spending lots of money, not listening to the investors. So in the future, I really look for entrepreneurs who are scrappy, don't want to spend a lot of money, and want to listen to the people who funded their company.
So as a guy with a lot of operating experience, and given what you just said about the importance of picking good entrepreneurs, have you ever succumbed to the temptation to invest in an idea that you liked and figured that you could fix whatever problems were there with your own operating expertise?
Because we invest in so many companies, I try to invest in companies where I do believe the entrepreneur does have good operating experience, and we don't have to step in. But an entrepreneur that's receptive to mentoring about how to operate a good business, you know, where the investors see a need for correction.
And that brings us really to the next topic, which is how do you, as an angel, how do you, or as a mentor, how do you add value? How do you mentor these guys, and how do you keep from turning the dials yourself versus really just helping the entrepreneur?
Well, you know, I think it's important that you let the entrepreneur run the show, but hopefully you invest in an entrepreneur that's really inquisitive about building a great company and wants to get help and advice from the investors that have a lot of operating experience and have him be receptive to that advice. That's one of the qualities that I really look for in an entrepreneur that wants to work, you know, to get over the hurdles that they see. The things that I help entrepreneurs most with is because we invest in the angel round very, very early, we give them a lot of advice and counsel on how to raise that venture capital round when they're raising $2, $3, $4 million, which is a real inflection point for a company getting their venture capital round. And so we work a lot with the companies raising the VC round. And then after that happens, the VC comes in and takes over a lot of the mentoring effort. But I like to help in the key inflection points where the company wants a partnership with a company that I've got good relationships with, like a Google, a Yahoo, an AOL. And when the company wants a partnership with one of those companies, I'll make that introduction for them at a very senior level so that they can kind of leapfrog their competition and get a leg up and get a partnership quicker than their competitors. And then on the exit strategy, you know, if a company needs to be sold, you know, I'd go help them pick a slate of potential buyers for the company and then do introductions to those potential buyers. If it's an IPO, introduce them to the investment bankers who we think would do the best job for that particular company.
Mm-hmm. So, Ron, you talked about helping out with financings, introductions, partnerships, exits. Some angels have a bad reputation. People say, VCs come in, they're like, oh, these angels, they don't do anything. Why are so many angels non-value add? Why do so many angels sort of invest and then cut and run, or, they're just dilettantes and they don't really want to help the companies? What is it that's different about you than a lot of other angels that are out there that don't have a lot of value add?
Well, unfortunately, there are angels out there that just want to invest money and basically place bets. And they should probably go to Las Vegas or something, because they don't add value. And I invest as an angel as a career. I do it full time, and I do it because I enjoy it, because it's interesting seeing what new technologies are sprouting up in the valley and then having something to do with that technology and mentoring the entrepreneur into very successful situations. So you get a lot of satisfaction about that. But there are angels who just want to invest as if they're buying a public stock. And, that doesn't really add any value. And when things go sideways, they're usually the ones to complain because they're not involved and they don't understand what went wrong. So why not be an angel that is involved enough that you actually understand what you're investing in? Because these are the highest risk investments out there. That's why they call it venture capital. You are venturing when you get into this angel investing game.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the big risks that angels take is the financing risk. You put your money in and no venture firm comes along and backs you up. So how do you align yourself with the various venture funds, or how do you ensure that your companies are going to get follow-on funding beyond the round that you provide?
Well, I believe part of the value add that I bring to an entrepreneur that I invest in is that I maintain extremely positive relationships with all the VCs in Silicon Valley and even quite a few on the East Coast, including your firms, Interwest and Excel. And so by having these positive relationships with the VCs, I can make strategic introductions and get meaningful meetings with these entrepreneurs who are going out for their next round of financing. And without those personal relationships with the key VCs in Silicon Valley, these entrepreneurs are going to have a tough time, and some of them never will get funded. But I think part of the value add of the angel group is that they have really good relationships with the major VCs in Silicon Valley and provide those introductions when the time's right, and be advocates and back channel on how the meetings go and mentor the entrepreneur through that whole fundraising process.
You've been listening to Ron Conway, one of the most famous angel investors in Silicon Valley. This is Bud Colligan with Mike Boych on Pod Summit.